Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Dan and Benny in the Ring. I'm Dan Sebastiano, joined, as always, by the BS Express himself, Benny Scala. Benny, how you doing today?
Can't complain. Living the life.
The date and life treating you any better?
Well, that's a whole different story. So, you know, a young lady invites me over, and she makes me a feast that is fit for a king.
That's good, right?
Well, ordinarily, except that her dog's name was King. So when she left the room, it was like, here, King, here, King. So the saga goes on.
Oh, no. Well, we are joined today a very special guest and a personal friend of both of ours, a man who very unique as far as our guests go, history and background. This man was a history teacher, school principal, has been involved in wrestling for many years. Anybody who's ever watched any of the territory tapes from the Virginia region has probably seen some of this man's footage. Some of the better matches I've seen in my lifetime. He had the pleasure of recording some of the best pictures and camera work. Of course, talking about the one and only Greek legend himself, George Apanthos. George, how are you doing today?
I am great. Thank you guys for having me on the show tonight. What a beautiful introduction. God bless you.
Well, it's a pleasure having you. I know I've had many, many good conversations with you, being a history major myself. You have just yes. Such a unique story. Before we got started on the air, we had an interesting talk about, if you don't mind me getting into your name, because you explained that your name being George Panthos is different from Pantis, which is your stage name in wrestling. Do you mind kind of explaining the that story and what your name might have been shortened from?
Sure. Actually, my name is George Pantis, and not shortened at all. Wow, okay. Most, as we all know, yes, most Greek names are so long they go around the corner and to grandma's house. But and that's my attempt to come back to Benny's joke from earlier, because that's about my jokes are just as corny.
Oh no,
corny is good.
yes, it is. But I come from the island of Lesbos, and that island is known. There are several regions of Greece whose last names are short, and that's one of them. So that is my birth last name. And then as far as the difference between Pontus and Pantus, my name has been butchered so much here. Some of my favorite ones, especially when I was an administrator in middle school. I was assistant principal over in Hampton. And some of the kids would say, Mr. Pantos, Pintos. I think my worst one was Mr. Pentihose. When I decided to get involved with the wrestling, I said, you know what? Pantos would be an easy name for everyone to say. So we'll go with that, Pantos. But honestly, I'm not happy with it. The correct pronounce, I'm very strict when it comes to having the Greek letters and alphabet and so on, being the teacher and me correct, being pronounced correctly. So it's Pantos, not Pantos. And I would always get upset when especially the bad guys would mispronounce my name there in VCW.
That's great. You know, as somebody whose name has a lot of vowels in it, being an Italian boy myself, I fully can sympathize with growing up hearing so many different pronunciations.
Oh, I bet, given your last name. Benny, I haven't asked you, is your last name shortened, or is that your...
No, and actually, I kind of have the same deal. I mean, the correct pronunciation of my name is actually Scala, like, you know, La Scala Opera House.
Yes, of course.
But it's got, you know, it's Scala. I mean, that's just kind of, it got Americanized, and I've kind of just gone with it. But it's really Scala.
Yeah. And I'm sure you were teased when you were young, scallops and everything else.
But. Yeah, but and the other thing, though, with my name is I had to prove to every teacher that my name was not Benjamin, that my legal name was Benny. My parents had a sense of humor. You know, it was not Benjamin or Bernard. I had to bring in my birth certificate a couple of times just to prove to my teachers that, you know, I wasn't going by a nickname. I was going by my legal name.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
That's pretty cool. That, I did not know that. And as Dan said, the three of us have been friends for a long time. That's cool.
Yes, sir.
Learn something new every day. Well, Benny, you got George on the line. What do you got for him?
Okay. Well, my first comment is my old boss at Pasco County Government, where I worked for 10 years, was Gabriel Papadopoulos. So that was kind of piqued my curiosity about Mr. Pontus. And so, George, there's a great movie with Eddie Murphy called Coming to America. I'm not even sure when it came out. But what I wanted to know is, what is your Coming to America story? Actually, this is a multiple-part question. And then how did you discover professional wrestling? And what was the first show that you ever went to? So when did the wrestling bug bite you to the point where you were bitten and hooked?
Okay, so we're going to leave. I'm going to take the questions in order that you gave them to me, even though it's an ABC. But I'm going to warn you, the first one is, all of them are going to be long-winded. But
okay, essays are allowed. It's not multiple choice.
Okay. Well, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Oh, wait a minute, that's a different story.
That's like one of those movie trailers. In a world.
So here we go. We were very, very poor. Actually, I take that back. We weren't poor. We were po. We couldn't even afford the letter R. But I'm pumped.
Yeah, you couldn't afford
thank
to
you,
pay attention.
Thank you very much. We had now back to being serious. We had no electricity, no running water in the house. But honestly, I didn't know we were poor because that's how everybody lived. My father was a tin, T-I-N, a tinsmith. So he had a skill, and that's important to the story of how did we come to America. So we had a relative here in Newport News, and every Christmas he would send a care package to the children, my sister and I, and to my parents' money, and a letter to my father inviting him to come to America. The 1960s was really a struggle in Greece, and he finally decided he was going to leave Greece. So my father had a choice. We were still in Greece now. We're a very small village of about 500 people, literally so small, though on some maps, you know, it's not even on the map. He had a choice of either going to Australia, because at that time, this is 1964, we're talking about, Australia was taking everybody and anybody because they needed their population to grow. However, in America, you had to have an immediate family member. Now, we had a member, a distant cousin, and his name was George. George and John are the two most typical Greek first names. And out of respect, I was a little boy. He was a grown man, so I always called him Uncle George. So you're going to hear me, in telling this part of the story, refer to him as Uncle George. But again, he was a distant cousin. His father and my mother were brothers and sister. So he would send us money to my family and toys to the kids, and always a letter in there inviting my father to come to America. So finally, my father said, I need to do something better for my family. My father's name, by the way, is Ignatios Pontus. He took my Uncle George on the offer. So he came as a tourist. Now, the problem with coming as a tourist is you come, you see, and you have to leave. But my father had a skill. He was a tinsmith, T-I-N, tinsmith. And that becomes very important to our story. Because there was at that time, I'm not quite sure how it is today, that there's a law in America that says if you have a skill and you're needed within a certain geographical area and you're the best in that area, then you can stay here as long as the person that's going to hire you does all the proper paperwork. And that's how my father was able to stay. Uncle George had a very good friend that owned the brass shop in downtown Hampton. It dealt with brass that they imported from all over the world and then sold it all over the United States. And my father wound up becoming a buffer, where he would take these brass items that really were quite filthy, and then he would clean them up. And he, you know, you never, I'm sorry. I get emotional when I get to this part of my life story, because as a little child, you don't understand what your parents do. I was so angry at my father for bringing us to what I felt like was this country that I didn't understand, the language I didn't understand. All my friends were back in Greece, and I was very angry with him. But it wasn't until later that I realized how much he was respected in a little village, and what he gave up just so we could have a great life. But when he got here and he was able to stay because of that skill, I want to take a second and speak slowly for everyone and anyone listening to hear this part. He worked from 8 in the morning till 8 at night. He would ride a bicycle, for those living in our Hampton Roads area, from Newport News to downtown Hampton. For those listening on internationally, yes, thank you. Listening internationally, that was quite a chore of a bicycle in rain and snow and everything else. And the job was very hard. He would stand in front of this buffing machine and all that filth and dirt would, you know, get on him. But so that was Monday through Saturday. And I said 8 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. I meant to say 8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. Wow. Because he was determined to save enough money to send us, so we had money. He was our only livelihood. Send us money home every month, put money down on a down payment on a little house, and to pay for our way to come to America, because he was a very proud man. And even though Uncle George paid for his plane ticket to come over, we came by ship because we were bringing our belongings. And on the seventh day of rest, he was actually a cantor in the Greek church. And so he worked on the seventh day as well. But he did it. I have goosebumps now as I tell this story. He did it in, he came in 64. We came in 66. 2 years later, he had my mother, my sister, and I come here to America. So that's how awesome. I wound up here in America. Yes. The second part of the question was about the wrestling. Well, we had wrestling was the only sport that I would watch on TV that you can then see it live in living color and in person at the Hampton Coliseum or the Norfolk Scope. They would come here. They would come to the Norfolk Scope every second Thursday, and then at the Hampton Coliseum once or twice a month on a Saturday. So here were these stars on TV that I could see in person. Now, we did have a basketball team, the Virginia Squires, but I really didn't understand it, and so I couldn't follow it, and I didn't speak the language. But I saw wrestling, and of course, the Greeks invented everything, and we invented the wrestling. So I gravitated to it and just fell in love with it. And the Hampton Coliseum was built in 1969. And I looked it up because I knew we had the interview. Because I knew I was at the very first show that Jim Crockett Promotions promoted at the Hampton Coliseum. And I looked it up, and it was March the 27th, 1971. So 50 years ago this month was their very first show,
awesome.
And I was there. Yes. And I can't remember the last part of the question that Benny asked me, but some of the guys that I remember vividly, and they were the ones I was attracted to and watching, that I'm sure some of them had to be on that card because they were the ones working for JCP at that time, were my favorite team were bad guys, Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen.
Sweet Hansen, oh.
Yeah.
Who was their manager, George? Did they have a manager?
Boy, you do know your history. Yes, sir. Playboy Gary Hart.
Right, okay.
Yes. And Johnny Weaver, George Becker with the good guys, Argentina Apollo, who was our version of like our Argentina Roca from up north. And then the other bad guys, I didn't really care for them that much, but Gene Anderson, the Missouri Mauler, Brooke Bernard. And on the undercard, a very young J.J. Dillon.
Wow.
Yes.
That's great. You know, speaking of the territories, you in the intro, I mentioned your involvement with Mid-Atlantic. You've told the story before. You had, if correct me if I'm wrong, you had a friend that knew the local promoter for Jim Crockett Promotions. Is that how you got involved? Because you told me the story where when you were a teenager and started taking all the pictures and everything, and then obviously the filming from there. But how did you first get involved to be the camera guy, like to all these famous videos that you've taken through the years?
Yes. The Jim Crockett, of course, owned the promotion, but he had a variety of promoters that promoted different areas. And he was the person that promoted our area was an older gentleman by the name of Joe Murnick. And Mr. Murnick had two sons, and the sons helped him in promoting the area as well. He had definitely had Norfolk, Hampton, Richmond, Roanoke, and I know there were a couple of other places in North Carolina that Mr. Murnick promoted. And what they would do back in those days, do I need to explain the term bicycling a tape for the audience, or do you want to explain it to them? Bicycling a tape meant that they would film the show that we would watch on our local TV at one of the studios there in North Carolina, and then they would take it around to the different stations, and it would air. They used basically the barter system, where a certain portion of the commercials the station would sell and they would make the money, and they would allocate the other half of the commercial time to Jim Crockett Promotions so they could advertise the local shows. So Mr. Joe Murnick would bring the tape up here and bicycle, but obviously drive it up here to turn it into, we always had Wavy Channel 10 here, the NBC affiliate that would air Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. So he would bring it up here for them to air. And then from there, he would go to the Daily Press, and I'm sure the Virginia Pilot, but my connection was the Daily Press because of Hampton, to give and buy space for advertisement in the Daily Press. The sports editor was a gentleman by the name of Tony Anthony, who just passed this year. And Tony was Greek, and we knew each other from the church. Now I was a teenager, and Tony was a grown man. So when I went to one of the shows there the first couple of times, Tony happened to be there and said to Mr. Murnick when he saw me that George is a very dear friend of the family, which was true. They had us over their house and to, you know, help us understand the American culture and all that. And he said to Mr. Murnick, George is a friend of mine. Please take good care of him. And I can tell you guys, from that moment on, I was almost like an adopted son to Mr. Murnick. Now remember, we're talking 1971, deep into kayfabe, deep mm-hmm. into everything being kept, you know, under the table, if you will. Yet, I asked Mr. Murnick if I could sit there and film, and he gave me permission. And I was literally at ringside next to the ring announcer. I still had to buy my ticket. I still had to, you know, come in on my own. But once there, I could sit right next to the ring announcer. And that's another beautiful story to tell of how I wound up there and filmed it. I filmed it for myself, no one else. Okay? And one of the side things with that part of the story is later on, when I became a teacher, and I would still continue to film the matches, it actually became like a tool for me in the classroom that the students were all wrestling fans. I was over in Portsmouth. A lot of them were low income, couldn't afford to go to the wrestling matches. And the carrot that I always held up was, if everybody passes the test, then next week I'll be filming them the matches at the scope, and I'll show them to you in class, you know, highlights.
That's
and
awesome.
It worked. They passed my test, and they, you know, I had the best grades in of the students.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Go ahead, Benny.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was going to ask you, like, if anybody failed, did, like, they get put in the camel clutch or anything like that? You know, because if the one kid who holds back the whole class isn't going to be a very popular kid. But, you know, George, speaking of that, I did want to – and this is going to be a very long-winded question. So I apologize in advance. It's like that movie Back to School. The, you know, the final exam has one question with 37 parts. I'm fascinated with education, and we talked about this. I had a teacher, and it's funny you said your dad was a Cantor. My teacher in fifth grade science was Mr. Murray Cantor. Now, back then, you know, you talk about kayfabe, in 1965, you never knew your teacher's first name. That was a big mystery. I didn't find that out until years later. All he was Mr. Cantor. And so I had him for science, and I have this theory that in life there's maybe – you know, 5 to 7 people that have a profound impact on your life. And even though I just had him for science, he was such a good teacher that, he's still one of those 5 to 7 people for me. And now fast forward 1965, I moved out of state, but 30 years later in 1995, I moved back to New York, and back into the same town, hometown of Farmingdale. And as fate would have it, my two older sons went to the same elementary school, Woodward Parkway, that I went to. And I found out that Mr. Cantor now was the assistant principal. So this is 30 years later. And so I actually went to school to see him. I hadn't seen him in 30 years. Now, Mr. Cantor had a nickname for everybody. Everybody. I was Benjamin Scala. Now, how he got that, I have no idea. But that was just me. And like, so... You know, I walk into the school, and I see this gentleman who, I mean, obviously I knew who he was. I thought, well, I'm going to have to introduce myself. He just looks at me. He goes, Benjamin Scala. It's like, holy cow. Like, you remembered me. And his son, Alan, I'm actually friends with on Facebook, so I think he's going to be listening to this. And we kind of chatted and everything, and it was great seeing him again. I found out that he started with Woodward Parkway Elementary School in 1956. He actually retired in 2001. He recently passed away, I guess within the last couple of years. But, you know, to me that – and we talked offline about that movie, Mr. Holland's Opus. And yes. And to me, Mr. Cantor was – you know, he was Mr. Holland. I think if – you know, if you could rent out in New York, I'm trying to think of a venue, like a Westbury Music Fair, which probably holds like 5,000 to 7,000 people, you could probably fill it up with all his former students. And I think even if they each got 3 minutes to talk about him, they'd be in there for a week at least, maybe even longer than that. And I have to add a little funny joke. He was the first gentleman, you know, that I ever knew that actually wore cologne. And I, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't really think twice about it. But then my nephew, Joe Gadis, was one of his, you know, students 30 years later. And he said to me, Uncle Benny, he said, Mr. Cantor has in his bathroom sink, he has three, it's hot, cold, and Brute. I don't know if you remember Brute.
That was I used to use it.
Yeah, that was the cologne. So, yeah, he had hot, cold, and Brute. So it's funny how like nothing really changed. But He was just an amazing person. I mean, he spent 45 years at the same school. He had, according to his son, numerous offers, and I'm sure he did, to go to other schools, you know, for administrative jobs. He wanted to stay right at Woodward Parkway. That was his home. And just, you know, I'm sure that, you know, there are other legends in education like that. But, you know, when I first met you, George, you were, to me, another Mr. Holland. And I mean that in the best way. So what I wanted to do is, if you don't mind, just, you know, give us your career in education.
I will, and thank you. You've touched my heart. I love that movie. It's a tearjerker movie fans listening that may not be familiar with it. Highly recommend it. And we all hopefully have a teacher like like Mr. Opus, like George Pontes, like so many others that have touched our lives in a positive way. And thank you for that. What an amazing introduction. And Ellen, if you're listening, that was beautiful what Benny said about your dad. Very honored, very blessed to have him, I'm sure. So here's my story. In Greece, teachers back then, I cannot speak for today, were very well respected. And also in comparison, because I'm from a small village where most of the people there were farmers, and that's honestly, I wanted to say this earlier when we were talking about coming to America. If my father had not come here, I would either have been a farmer or I would have probably wound up in Germany working in one of the factories. So many blessings of him, you know, coming here. And so because of that, teachers obviously were paid a lot more money. And they were well respected, to the point that if a teacher walked into a room, and let's just say people, well, first of all, when a teacher walked into the classroom, the students would stand up to welcome the teacher, because the school system there, the buildings, it's not like here where the students travel to go see a teacher. The students stay in the same classroom, and the teacher goes to the students because of the building, school building being so small. So, and then if it's out, you're out in public and, you know, a teacher comes by to sit down at a cafe or whatever, and there's no seat. I mean, the grown-ups will stand up and say, no, you know, Mr. Teacher, Mr. Pontes, come over here, sit down. So as a child watching this, I was like, man, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. I've always wanted to be an educator. My sister, Mary Ann Pontes, she wound up going into education as well, and became a Spanish teacher here in America and also an administrator. And so I worked. Actually, we're going to back the story up for just a bit, if you don't mind, because this part is important as well.
Of course.
My father came over in 64. We talked about, you know, crucial points in history earlier. We touched on. We came over in 66, 1968. I'm 12 years old. I walk home from school, and my father, who was never home before me, was there. And my father was a man's man that never showed emotion, and he was there crying. It scared me to death as a 12-year-old. When I asked my mother what happened, she said that the place where my father worked, the bread shop, had burnt down to the ground. Mm. My father spoke next to nothing when it came to the American language. Eventually, he knew enough to understand and speak to get his work done, but that was about it. And when that happened in 1968, in his eyes, his world was done. Now he had to go back to Greece, go back a failure. How would he face his friends? What would he do? Of course, thank God, it was an old building and the boss had insurance. It was a faulty electrical thing in the wall, and he built a much better place. But I tell that story to say that I started working at the age of 12. Every day after school, I would work at that brass shop. And I started to go there just to help sort out the burnt pieces from the good ones so they can sell as seconds. And the boss was so impressed that I wasn't like the other kids that he offered me a job, 50 cents an hour, which was a fortune, because before that I made 0 cents an hour.
Right.
And so I worked actually from the age, I worked from the age of 12 until I retired a year and a half ago, every day of my life. And eventually, when I decided I was going to go into education, I worked through college. I went to Christopher Newport, worked through college after school every day. And then when I graduated as a teacher, I went to the boss to tell him I'm leaving. He said, no, George, stay here. I will make you a manager. So I did not go into teaching right away. But eventually that love drew me, and I put in offers, and thank God Portsmouth Public Schools offered me a job, and I started teaching over there. And so long-winded answer to the, and that's going to be the theme for tonight, I'm afraid. But I went into education because I wanted to from day one. And as corny as this sounds, I love America with all my heart and soul. I don't want to be anywhere else. And it was my way of giving back and saying, thank you, America, for giving me and our family the opportunity to excel here. And I do that by teaching the young people to respect the past, learn from it, and prepare the future for a better tomorrow.
That's an awesome story.
Thank you.
If you don't mind me asking, George, as you and I have had many conversations as a history major myself, is your admiration of the past and that kind of ideology, is that why you kind of veered towards the history and social studies path of teaching versus being, say, like an English teacher or something like that?
Yes. English teacher, I still... my other old joke is... I learned about America and the language by watching TV. So I learned from Dick Van Dyke how to walk, which he tripped and fell down at the beginning of the episode.
Oh yeah,
and
over the Ottoman.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. And I learned to speak by watching Ricky Ricardo on I Love Lucy. So I still have an accent. And
oh, that's so funny.
But I worked that in to say my English has never been great.
Well, I didn't mean anything. History, I was just using that as an example.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, and I took advantage of it so I can work on my joke. yes, I've always loved history. It's you know, coming from Greece, of course, the cradle of civilization, and ingrained in me by my father, the importance of the contributions that the country of Greece has given to the world. From day one, I've loved history and wanted to share that love with my students. The biggest compliments I've gotten is, thanks to Facebook, former students reaching out and telling me how much they still remember some of the stuff that not the personal stories, but I would make the stories about history personal by making it come alive, and how much they still remembered. And the coolest part is that they would share it with their children. So, yes, I've always loved history.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely. Same with me. My, you know, I look at the past and it's just always been such a fascinating topic for me. And, you know, I'm sure it was the same mindset you were in. There was really no other major to pick. But speaking of conversation, you and I met through the local wrestling scene here in Virginia, VCW. How did you, if you don't mind me asking, how did you get involved with them? And do you have a story about how you came to be through the local promotions here?
I do. And it's a great story. VCW, Virginia Championship Wrestling, originally Vanguard Championship Wrestling, was actually founded by Ronald Knoll back in 1996, and for the last 20 years has been promoted here in this area by Travis Bradshaw. So I knew of their existence, but during that time in the 90s, actually it was 98 that I went into administration. And so even though I knew of them and I wanted to be involved, I really couldn't. Can you imagine, here I am, at that time I was assistant principal at Spratley Middle School. Two students just got into a fight. I have to suspend them. And the parent comes to take the child and say, oh, by the way, Saturday I have a wrestling show over here at the bingo hall. Why don't you come on down, you know, where we'll do the fighting.
Right.
After suspending your kid. Right? So I again, working a little humor here, but I stayed away from getting involved. Here's a little side bit. My arch nemesis through the years, and both of you, I know Benny has been to some of our shows, and Dan, you've been to all of them. My arch nemesis, of course, is Jerry Stefanichis. I was actually the one that introduced Jerry to VCW and got him involved originally with Travis. Jerry's family and I are very, very good friends from the church. I grew up with his mother, actually, in Hampton. I babysat Jerry Stefanich. That's what makes it so. Listen, I'm getting angry here. Just mentioning his name, of him being so treacherous. with me. But anyway, I digress. and so I stayed away from it. Back in around 2008 and 9, my father passed away in 1990 from cancer, and my mother made the decision in 2005 to go back to Greece and live her remaining lives over there, and I was miserable. I was a 12-month employee. I couldn't get away to see her. Greek men are very much, and I'm very proud to say, and I'm sure Italian men are the same way, mama's boys.
No, with pride, sir.
That. Yes. And so it was killing me that I couldn't see her. I went from driving 5 minutes from work to her house to now having to spend a day flying, and by the time I come back, and I would spend thousands of dollars to go there for 2 weeks. So finally I said, you know, this is silly. Let me go back into the classroom. That gives me my summers to be able to go over there, spend time with her and my sister, who, God bless her, she retired early to go back to Greece and be with her and take care of her. And it was one of the best decisions I did, because I was able, as she got older, I was able to, and her health declined, and I was able to go and visit her and spend some good quality time with her. But I wanted, so at that time, once I was in the classroom, you know, I was more like a cog in the wheel, if you will. It was easier for me to get back involved. And of all people, it was Jerry that called me and said, George, I'm involved with VCW now. Our ring announcer coming up at our show can't make it. Would you like to be a ring announcer? Like, sure, why not? And I really had purposely, because I didn't want to be tempted, I had stayed away from being in, knowing about what they were doing locally. So when I went as a ring announcer, I saw what an amazing product they were producing. And at that time, kind of once I did a little research, I decided to invest in the company. And eventually, as we know, I became the commissioner of VCW until I lost my job. But that's a story for part two of the podcast.
Right.
Although I did eventually, as we know, get my job back.
Of course.
Yes.
So that's one of the better stories
I got involved.
For anybody that wants to look up the VCW product on YouTube, there's a good clip of you training with you're in the ring with Livid running the ropes. George, it's one of the better bits that they have.
Yes, and let me tell you, I took that very, very, very seriously when we were training. We were over at Body by D's in Gloucester, and thank God he did that with me, because that really got me prepared for that match. But the first time I wrestled was back in that was in 2017. The first time was 2012, and there's another video on YouTube of me training. At that time, Charge and Crotch were helping me train, but I didn't take it as seriously. And let me tell you, because that match is on YouTube as well, the six-man tag team with me and the set as partners versus the Hull Brothers, the Hull Stars, and Jerry Stefanicic. And that one, I didn't fare so well, at least at many portions of the match, because I didn't take my training seriously. So thank you for noticing that I took it very seriously with Livid.
Oh yeah, you can see the fire in your eyes. Benny, I know you're chomping at the bit. What do you got for George here?
So, George, you know, it's really funny, because when you were telling the story about how you came to America, you were telling the story and you were talking about your dad here working and saving and sending money back and you know, saving for a house here, and you coming to America by ship. And I'm thinking, like, why does this story sound so familiar? And it's pretty much the exact same story of Bruno Sammartino and how he came to America. So I just want to make that comment that when you were telling me that story, it's like, wow, this is deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra would say.
Yes.
So my question is, I heard on an interview that somebody gave you the name George the Greek, and I was going to ask you, who gave you that name?
Well, actually, a little clarification there. That name was given to me by me.
Oh.
Yes. I realized quickly back at that time, of course, you had that Nature Boy Ric Flair. You had Greg the Hammer Valentine, Rip the Profile Hawk, and you know, I can go on and on. And as time came past, I was very fortunate, thanks again to Mr. Murnick allowing me free reign at the Hampton Coliseum and the Norfolk Scope, and my ingenuity in and fearlessness, if I can say that word, in not being afraid to going up and talking to some of the wrestlers. And I was able to get to know them. And I quickly realized I want these guys to remember me. They're not going to remember George Pontes. And especially in the 80s with the Four Horsemen and the whole, you know, them traveling all over America. So I said, okay, if I, at that time, Nick the Greek was a very famous name in sports. And so I said, I know, I'll be George the Greek. So I made sure every time I introduced myself to a wrestler for the first time, hey, this is George the Greek. And it stuck, and that's how they, you know, they remembered me, and it worked because they remember me after all these years.
That's great.
So I gave the name to myself because I wanted to make sure they knew who I was, that I wasn't just another face.
Anybody that's been around the wrestling business long enough knows some of the best nicknames are self-anointed.
Yes, indeed.
Benny, and you had another question. You brought up a point earlier about his George's involvement with Conrad Thompson. Don't you hit that question?
Yeah, I my note is I'm doing a Vern Gagne. I'm just, you know, I'm holding that payoff out way too long. Like with Hulk giving him the belt, he never did that. You know, might have been a whole different
right.
story if he didn't do the Dusty Rhodes false finish like 8,000 times. You know, and just once gave him the belt. Maybe history would have changed. But so yeah, that's one thing that I recently saw that your the interview, and I mean very I guess prophetic. The gentleman just passed away. Was it yesterday? Mr. Crockett Jr.
Yes.
Yep.
And yes, he passed
yeah.
away March the 3rd.
And but you're an integral part of this project with Conrad Thompson. Is it a 5-hour interview with Mr. Crockett?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So I guess number one, describe your involvement, and then number two, how does like a wrestling fan with an insatiable appetite like yours truly, how do we get to listen to this?
Excellent. Very good. Yes. And I'm going to answer your question. And then I'd like for us to go back a little bit more as to the footage and how else it's gotten involved in, like with the WWE Network. So,
right.
for, you know, we'll talk about that as well. So Conrad and I became friends because once he started doing the podcast, I wear many hats, and one of the other hats that I wear is that I'm actually a writer for the local military paper, The Flagship. And I interview sports, my department is sports and entertainment. So when Conrad started doing the podcast, of course, with Ric Flair, and then with Bruce Pritchard, I was hooked. And I reached out to Conrad to interview him for the paper, and we bonded. You know, our love, just like the three of us have bonded with our love for wrestling, same thing with Conrad and I. We bonded with our love for wrestling, and we'll stay in touch. You know, we may text each other once or twice a month about different things that are happening, or if something I think is cool, you know, I may share it with him if I come across an old picture or something. And Conrad knew, of course, with how I had filmed the footage back then and that I sold a lot of it to the WWE. And he reached out to me when he did the interview with Jim Crockett, and he knows my love and affection for the Crockett family. And he asked if I still had some of that footage or did I sell all of it to WWE. And God is good every day. I had just recently, like maybe a couple of weeks before he reached out to me, I was doing some cleaning in my office and I found more footage that I had originally filmed with my Super 8 camera. So I said to him, God is good. I have some footage. And then we talked about what he wanted to do with it. And of course, we agreed. And it now is part of part one that he did with Jim Crockett. It's almost a 3-hour interview. And the last 40 minutes of that is my footage, specifically 1982 of matches involving Wahoo McDaniels versus Abdullah the Butcher. There's a great match of Roddy Piper versus Jack Briscoe. There's Jack Briscoe versus Ric Flair for the world title. It's just incredible how blessed I was to witnessing, amazing wrestling and of course to film them. And now to the fans listening out there, I do want to make sure I'm clear in saying that these are highlights of what I filmed. Film was extremely expensive back then, and then not only to buy it, but also to develop it. And again, we were poor when we left Greece, and we were poor when we were here in America. So the only way I could have it was to just film highlights of it. But I was astute enough to realize, you know, to have a beginning, middle, and end with many of them. And so all of that is included on there. And then I was able to save through the years newspaper clippings. And I have some other candid pictures that I shared with Conrad and his amazing team. And they were able to add those pictures in as the story folds out. Also, George Napolitano, very, very famous with the so many wrestling magazines that he was responsible for. George contributed to pictures. Robert Riddick, a very dear friend of mine that passed away, 6-7 years ago now. He was a photographer for George here in this area. His pictures are featured on there. And it's just an amazing, amazing, extremely candid interview. And Mr. Crockett opened up about everything and anything, and Conrad did an excellent job with the questions. And those intrigued by our conversation can go to adfreeshows.com, all one word. You click on there, and it is a subscription service. It's on the Patreon community, and all of Conrad's podcasts and very exclusive content that he has, and that constantly evolves, continues to add new material on there. And the beauty of this is, now it is a paid service, but fans don't have to deal with the commercials that are on YouTube when some of the shows are on there, or even on the even on the podcast. There, that's why it's called ad free. And from the, of course, from 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff, with What Happened When with Tony Schiavone, Arn with Arn Anderson, Grilling with JR, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard, and so much more. He's got Kurt Angle on there. I just read Gerald Briscoe will be on there. It really is worth the different levels of money. And for each level that a person, you know, pays to join, you get a lot more, but it's worth every penny. And not only did he do the interview with Jim Crockett, Jim Herd, who is a very controversial person in WCW, that interview on there is just amazing. So that's how so anyone listening, please go to adfreeshows.com. It is worth your while, time, and money. I do want to take a second. I can hear my voice. I was excited to talk about what Conrad has done, but at the same time, I'm very saying Jim's name has really gotten to me, and I want us to talk about him a little bit.
I understand, and that's a heck of a product. We were going to transition, if you're good. If you want to take a second, Benny, you have a shout-out to a sponsor this week.
Yes, sir. Tiger Towing and Auto Sales, the boys in New London, Iowa, Rod and the crew. I call Rod Dr. Hook. I worked in collections for a few years. That was my nickname for anybody. You know, when I had a customer who wasn't paying their car payment, I said, you don't want to date with Dr. Hook. It's not a good thing because you're going to wake up next in the morning and you're going to have an oil stain where your car used to be. So they don't do that kind of towing, but they are great. And their motto is, when we hook up, we pull out. So join the fine folks at Tiger Towing, sponsor for our show.
Good stuff.
Excellent.
You know, for those listening, the show is being recorded on March 4th. Obviously, the big story in wrestling to this week, the passing of Jim Crockett Jr. George, I know you were very involved, and you had just mentioned. I'm gonna just completely turn it over to you for your thoughts on Jim and his contributions.
Yes, definitely a visionary and a man that was able to take a local product, working out of a small little office in the Carolinas, and to create this empire that has influenced the lives of so many wrestlers, from the Nature Boy Ric Flair, from Ricky Steamboat, Black Jack Mulligan, to bring them to the national stage. I was fortunate enough, full disclosure, I met Jim Crockett once in passing. He was not the one that would come here locally. And I did not, again, given our economic condition, the only matches that I saw were in the city of Hampton at the Hampton Coliseum and Norfolk Scope in Norfolk. And there either David Crockett would come or Mr. Murnick. And so, but one time Jim Crockett was there, and by then I had access to the back as well. And he was walking by, and I saw him, and like, oh my God, it's Jim Crockett. So I said, hello, Mr. Crockett, how are you? He said, fine, thank you. And that was the extent of our conversation, okay? But David Crockett and I became friends back then, and now as time has passed, we have become extremely close. So I was aware that Jim was not doing well here recently, and knew that his health had declined tremendously. And of course, now he's no longer with us. And it's been heartwarming to see the outpouring of condolences and support that I've been reading on social media, from whether it's Bobby Eaton or Ricky Morton or Ric Flair, so many that are paying correct homage to what an amazing individual Mr. Crockett was. He really was, the voice of our generation when it came to running, putting down the law, if you will. When Jim appeared on the show, he appeared very irregularly. And when he came on to announce the Jim Crockett Cup tournament, or he would make an announcement concerning what happened with the belts, I mean, you knew, oh my God, it's going down now. This is happening, and he added that aura of respect and authority, and it warms my heart to see that he was respected greatly. And the outpour of support continues to come out. And thank God he, and thanks to Conrad Thompson, who hosted Jim and David at the StarCast 4 in Baltimore over a year ago now. Jim was able to see, and David, of course, but Jim especially was able to see how much he was loved by the fans that were there. And I think it's awesome because, time passes and you don't know what history remembers, going back to our love. And history remembers Jim in a great positive light. So God bless him. And as we say in Greece, may his memory be eternal.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Benny, as we conclude our time with George here, you have a final question for the man himself?
Well, I think we're going to probably need a part two here. We really didn't scratch the surface. I wanted to make a quick comment, though, based on what George just said. And, everybody, we're talking about history here. And, the modern wrestling fan, their reference point is WWE. and you know, the younger people, they don't realize that back in the day, there were, you know, I don't know how many territories, maybe 30 territories that, you know, there was a Jim Crockett promotion. Then there was the Houston territory with Paul Bosch. There was St. Louis with Sam Muchnick. There was the Portland territory with Don Owens. And, but I do believe that Jim Crockett Promotions was the longest running promotion that was owned by a single family. A lot of these promotions, like the Dallas territory, it was bought by Fritz von Erich, but it was owned by someone else previously. Florida was Eddie Graham, but it was owned by somebody else. But I think the Crockett's actually was the longest running, until it was sold to Turner, was the longest running promotion in America. I'm not sure if I have that right or not, George.
I feel confident you are right. I know it was founded back in 1931.
Right.
And of course, sold to Turner in 1988. So from 31 to 88, my Crockett owned. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, real quick, George, I do want to ask you, because I did look you up on IMDb, and I saw that you have acting credits. So could you maybe like just touch on your acting career?
I will, but before I do that, I just realized you had asked me a question about VCW and that I didn't come back on, and that is, you know, what's happening now?
I was going to circle back on that at the end, but go for it.
Oh, okay. Very good. And you know, what's really crazy is March the 14th, last year, we were scheduled to have one of our biggest shows ever over at Hampton High School, mm-hmm. where we did shows once a year there, where, you know, at that time, and now, of course, retired, but we did it as a fundraiser for the school. We were bringing in Sergeant Slaughter. We had a lot of buzz on the local media. You know, he was interviewed on the radio and everything else. We had sold a lot of tickets. And then literally, the day of, we had to cancel the show, because that's when everything, March 14th, yeah. is that date in our history that everything went down. Yep. And I have to say, at that time, you know, I felt the frustration, but I quickly realized, God forbid, what if somebody had come there and, you know, had gotten COVID? So thank God that the show did not go on. But ever since then, we have been monitoring carefully and watching and listening to what our governor says. And also, we've had some changes in the promotion. You know, right now, again, my arch nemesis, Jerry Stefanicius, is now the director of operations, and that's going to entail a whole new scenario there that I don't know what is going to entail. But we are looking forward to having in the near future, and near will be when Governor Northam declares that Virginia can openly and safely, you know, have events again, with the public being able to attend 100%. And when that happens, we will return with our great shows, not only at the Masonic Temple in Norfolk, but at the Salvation Army in Suffolk, at Hampton High School, and over in other areas that we you know, promote. So it'll be interesting to see what's in store for us coming up the next couple of months, but I can guarantee you it's going to be an exciting time. And to for all the fans listening, don't you dare miss that first show when it happens here at the Masonic Temple in Norfolk, Virginia.
I can't wait. You know, me and the wife will be front row as always.
Yes, sir. And now to answer your question, yes, I have always loved acting. And I've been very blessed to, in the past, to have small parts, nothing, you know, no big parts, but small parts in a variety of movies, TV commercials. At this point, I guess it's been about 5 years now, I opened up a dinner theater in Williamsburg. So it was a murder mystery dinner theater comedy. And, you know, we had a live audience. I've done theater shows as well, and just been very blessed. And, you know, going back to why I love America so much, this little boy that didn't speak a word of English when he came to America in 1966, to live his dream of watching what this wrestling on TV and become a part of it, to be involved on different levels nationally with the selling of my footage to WWE, with my footage. And I do want to mention this. My footage was also featured as exclusive footage. So not only is my footage exclusively used for the Jim Crockett documentary with Conrad, but there was another, not documentary, interview, but there was a Jim Crockett, the good old days documentary that was done about Jim Crockett Promotions, directed by Michael Elliott and sold by High Spots, and they were the ones that produced it. And my footage, again, is used exclusively there to tell the story of Jim Crockett Promotions with a variety of different wrestlers that are interviewed. And it was from there that my footage, I reached out to WWE, and I knew I had footage of something that no one else has. And that is the Battle of the Nature Boys. It was November 22nd, 1979, when the Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers, and the Ric Flair, not yet the Nature Boy, battled for the title at the Norfolk Scope. They wrestled three different times at the arenas, in Charlotte, in Richmond, and at the Norfolk Scope. And eventually, Ric Flair wins and gets the name Nature Boy. And I have the only known footage of them, arena footage of them wrestling. And fans listening here can see it on the network under the Hidden Gems section.
That's great. I mean, to let me ask you something, George, especially the history side of you. When you were recording that match, did you even for a second just envision how important that film would be?
Definitely not important in the sense of, selling it because WWE paid me a pretty penny for it. Let me tell you, not just that one. Yeah, I sold 6 hours of footage to them, and they some of the other pieces of footage that are on there are all related with Rick, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with how much Hunter loves Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. So there's Rick versus Greg Valentine, Rick versus Harley Race. They did a rivalries, Flair versus Steamboat. My footage is on there. And it was Hunter, actually, when he found out I had that footage of Flair versus Rogers, that he green-lighted the person I was working with there in the archives to make the deal. So I didn't have that vision. I didn't even know, really, at that time of what WWWF was. But I understood the importance of the match. I knew who Buddy Rogers was because I collected and I have hundreds of wrestling magazines still in my possession. And so I knew who he was, and I knew that this match was important because it was billed as the Battle of the Nature Boys. And so I knew that this would be historic, and it was. It was amazing. And by the way, Bill Apter covers it greatly in his book. I didn't know wrestling was fixed. What does it go?
Is wrestling fixed? I didn't know it was broken.
Yeah.
That's thank you. Covers it very well. He was there that night. And actually, you can see him right at ringside taking the pictures in the footage.
He was a huge Buddy Rogers fan, Bill Apter.
Yes, 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 indeed. And Bruno, and,
Look! One of the books on my shelf over there. Looking at it right now.
Oh, great! I will definitely tell Bill that. I'm going to tell him about
great read.
So he can listen.
Oh yeah,
it is. It is, isn't it?
Absolutely. As we wrap up, George, one last question before we let you go. I mean, I know you're retired, and you were telling us about the family, but what's next? What's in the store in the future for George here coming up?
The beauty of this great country we call the United States of America is that you can write your own future. It hasn't happened yet, as Doc in Back to the Future said to Marty. And so I will continue to be involved with professional wrestling. I will continue to look for parts, bit parts, small parts, whatever comes my way in regards to movie and the TV commercials. And so that door is always open, and I just continue to be blessed that I am alive and well and healthy in the greatest country in the world, to quote Harley Race, and God's green earth right here, the good old U.S. of A.
Very well said. George, we're definitely going to have you back. I don't even feel like we covered 10% of the stories that you could tell us. And I mean, you, me, Benny, you know, we appreciate the time that you've given us, and we'll definitely reach out to have you back on the show. And, it was an honor to talk to you. I know you've got such a history, especially me being in Virginia myself. I have a special place in my heart for your stories. But again, thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll definitely reach out to have you back.
Thank you so much. And again, for the fans listening, it's been an honor and a privilege to be interviewed by you guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You have humbled me with this experience. And if you want to find out more about Virginia Championship Wrestling, look us up on Facebook, and you will find a lot of information, and also on YouTube. As Dan mentioned, there's a lot of footage of many of our matches, and we've had when Ric Flair retired back in 2009, we were one of the first to bring him in on a local independent level to be part of our show. So we've had Roddy Piper, we've had Booker T. I mean, I can go on and on with the big names that have graced our stage, both in ring and as a special guest for autographs and pictures. So check out Virginia Championship Wrestling on YouTube and on Facebook, and we will see you at the matches.
Yes, sir. Thank you, George. You have yourself a great night.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good night.
Wow. You know, we always talk about, Benny, how we love hearing the stories, and George is just, I mean, it's you couldn't script that. I mean, literally, the poor kid came in, you know, dad worked 100 hours a week to put the family together. There he's 12 years old working in the factory, scraping by, ends up, like you said, the Mr. Holland's Opus story of being one of the most beloved educators in the region, and ends up with some of the most famous archival wrestling footage ever recorded on top of his local involvement. It's just, it's such a great, I mean, you couldn't script something like that if you dropped.
It's truly the American dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and he talked about writing his own future. I think he needs to write a book. I mean, there's a book in this whole conversation, I think, with his life story, even though it's not complete. But I think, I mean, so far he's got a hell of a book there. And I think one of these days, when the world becomes normal again, that I would like to make a road trip, and maybe we can do a live podcast from ringside at a VCW show.
That would be great, because that is one thing I know, like I said, I'm very biased because they're my local wrestling promotion, but VCW on YouTube and Facebook, Virginia Championship Wrestling, they have some of the greatest greater indie performances. And it's great because Virginia had such a presence in mainstream wrestling as well. The WWE does shows in Norfolk and Hampton, and even some of like when TNA would tour, and some of the other promotions. So it was always cool to see, you know, they do the dark matches, or they'd have the, you know, I hate to say it, but they'd have the random jobber, and it's like, hey, I know that guy, you know, because they would always they'd always bring out the local talent, or, you know, whenever the police would come in to break up a fight, and it's always the local indie guys, right, you know, that are the cops. You know, hey, I know that guy. It's just, and of course, you know, like I said, in filming in Virginia, they're always around here. It's great stuff.
It's a great experience. I watched, when I was prepping for the podcast, I watched a match where it was George and Libby the Clown against Benjamin Banks and Jerry Stefanitsis. Yeah. And it was one of the things I wanted to talk to him about, but George comes out with the Hampton High Marching Band.
Yep.
And I guess a lot of the wrestling, the shows that he promotes are fundraisers. In fact, I think just about all of them are.
Yeah, any of the shows that they would do at the, when he was talking about the one in Hampton, it was always a fundraiser for the school board and all that.
And that I don't know. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know what the crowd was, but every single person in that crowd was totally emotionally involved in that match. And I told George, I said, if you wanted to, because Jerry Stefanitsis, he reminded me of an indie version of Jim Cornette. I mean, he's a heat magnet.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing, and you know, anybody that's ever been to an indie show is you have the same 100 people, the same handful of people.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, like I said, my wife and I will be front row at the next show. It's the same, you know, when you sit by the ring, it's the same people every month, every show. And the crowd is almost like an invested family. So when you have somebody who can bring the heat, and at the time, Benjamin Banks was a big heel. The crowd was heavily invested. And of course, everybody loves George. So they were totally on board, and Livid was super over, still is. It was just so great to see that. And some of the talent that has come through there, I know George talked about it just in recent memory. Obviously, the show that was canceled just at the peak of COVID would have featured Sergeant Slaughter, but they have had shows, you know, before that, just like I said, just in recent memory, you had, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Gangrel Billy Gunn, who Billy Gunn was a VCW champion,
yeah.
Yes, for a good chunk. He had a bunch of good matches. One of the famous, I talk about fans, one of the famous fans in the crowd is a Billy Gunn. She does, Justine does the Billy Gunn cosplay and dresses up. Actually, one of the best signs I've ever seen. The main event at the VCW show was Billy Gunn defending his title against Al Snow. And she had a sign, and I might be misquoting it, but I believe it said, why would you want head when you can have that ass? And it was like the ass was
nice.
The Billy Gunn logo. I thought it was great. But you know, it's the crowd, and a lot of what makes VCW work is the chemistry that George brings and his interaction with the crowd. And because maybe it's the administrator in him, but I believe him as a commissioner when he comes out and, you know, I'm not going to let this stand. Next show in Hampton, you two are going to wrestle in a steel cage. Like, yeah, George, tell him, you know, it's great. And we can't wait.
When he had Jerry in a headlock and he's winding up and, you know, he's going to punch him, and like every person in that crowd, I told George that if you really wanted to do a fundraiser, you know, charge $5 to kick Jerry Stefanitsis in the butt. I bet every person in that building would have lined up to do that. And he would have, you know, definitely would have increased his revenue for that night.
Oh yeah. It was great stuff. But I mean, again, another great show. Benny, any parting words tonight?
No, I just, you know, I just really enjoyed George. He's, you know, a humble man, and just hearing his story, you know, anybody, a younger person maybe who's, you know, not, still on their way up and, you know, in life, can hear something like that and say, you know, this is possible through, you know, if I work hard and you know, do all the right things, I can achieve greatness. I mean, I'm a little bit older, but I was inspired listening to George.
Yeah.
He's done so much with his life.
And it's as someone who's been quick to criticize the system and how some things can be unfair, it's very touching to see George and the genuine appreciation he has for the opportunities that America gave him. Like you said, he's literally the American dream personified. Sir. But no, it's been great talking to him. We continue on our end. We continue to expand. Just recently, as I updated on our Facebook page, we're now on Google Podcasts, Audible. I just received word from Amazon. We'll be on the Amazon podcast with the next round of updates, which I think, actually, come to think of it, we're recording this on a Thursday, so that's already happened. Pandora and among other Spotify, among others. Yeah, pretty much anywhere podcast can be listened to, but our home base is Podbean. So Dan and Benny in the Ring, we continue to grow. We appreciate the fan base, what everybody's done for us. We're on Facebook, Dan and Benny in the Ring. We're obviously, like I said, anywhere podcast can be listened to, Dan and Benny in the Ring. And we could not have done this without the fans, and you guys have been great, and we continue to look forward. And as always, you know, again, we have a lot of good stuff coming up. So again, we continue to keep going forward. For Benny Scala, I'm Dan Sebastiano. Thanks as always. Good night, everybody. And as always, happy wrestling.
Good night.